If you ache for truth, goodness, and beauty, if you're hungry for a Christianity with substance and strength, if you long for a faith that's big and bold and biblical and all about Jesus Christ, if you're inspired by the idea of one church that has spanned 20 centuries, 24 time zones, and two hemispheres, enfolding every race, nation, and language, then you're considering Catholicism.
Well, welcome back to the Considering Catholicism podcast. My name is Greg, and I am here once again with Corey.
Hello again.
And we just finished a conversation about the Eastern Orthodox churches. Mm-hmm. That episode released a couple of days ago, but it's still in like the real world where we are, whatever. It's still the same day. And Corey just made the point that it was 8 years ago today that both he and I entered the Catholic Church at Easter Vigil through RCIA. And one of the questions is, why did we enter the Catholic Church instead of the Orthodox churches? So let me set this up. We've had a lot of listeners ask this. There is a, and I remember when I was investigating Catholicism, considering Catholicism myself, there is a, I don't want to say a feeling, but an instinct or a trend or something, I don't know, with some Protestants. And here's how it goes. Protestant gets dismayed with Protestantism, fed up with it, wants to find the church of history, the original church, all the stuff we talk about here all
tradition,
the time.
Tradition.
Yeah. They want to go liturgy. Back to the early church. Yeah. And so they start moving towards Catholicism, but then they get turned off by some of the stuff that goes on in the Catholic Church. They get turned off by the politics of the Pope, especially in the last 10 years, a lot of conservative Protestants will write me and say, well, I'd kind of like to join the Catholic Church for the theology and the liturgy and all that, but I don't want to have a pope who's a super liberal pope or whatever,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, so it's essentially, I don't want to buy a deck chair on the Titanic if it's going to go down and not be what I signed up for.
Well, and a lot of people are saying the Catholic Church is going to go the way of Anglicanism and all this kind of stuff. And we've addressed that in other, in other episodes. But they're like, man, I'm fleeing the Presbyterian Church, or I'm fleeing the whatever because it's gotten crazy. And now I'm going to go to the Catholic Church and it's getting crazy. Where can I go to keep like running to greener pastures? And they go, well, if I really want to go back to that original church, the early church, the church of history, the church of the first few centuries, Orthodoxy seems like where I should go. Mm-hmm. So I've had several listeners write in recently and say, convince me why I shouldn't just become Orthodox instead of turning Catholic. I mean, these are Protestants considering it. So I thought, well, let's try to answer that question. So 8 years ago, we entered the Catholic Church. Corey, I'll let you go first. Why didn't you become Orthodox? Why did you become Catholic instead of Orthodox?
Yeah. So I kind of considered the whole gamut of ecclesiastical possibilities when I was thinking about it. I looked at Orthodox doctrine. I visited an Orthodox church. I mentioned last time we have an Antiochian Orthodox church in town where we live. And there's a lot to recommend that. There's a lot of similarities between the Orthodox churches and Catholic churches in terms of doctrine, in terms of liturgy. It's a distinct liturgy, but it checks the same boxes as the Catholic liturgy, has a similar form. I was looking especially at truth claims. And as we mentioned last time, a big one is the role of the papacy and what authority the Pope has. And so I looked at the scriptural passages about Peter and about his authority. I looked at the writings of the church fathers and of theologians throughout the ages that have commented on what the nature of Peter's authority is and all of that, and what the Orthodox themselves say about it. And it's interesting because there are some key concessions that the Orthodox make about that. Most Orthodox will agree that Jesus made Peter the head of his church when he said, your name is Peter, and on this rock I build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. They'll also usually admit that the Bishop of Rome is the successor of Peter in a special way and carries an authority because of that. The dispute is more about the nature of the authority and what the Pope can and can't do. But you see church fathers in both the East and the West in the first few centuries of the church admitting that the Pope in Rome is the successor of Peter, has a special prominence in the church. And I just don't think there's a way around that. And it makes sense to me that the church that is in communion with the Pope, in a sense, has the institution of the papacy, would have a better understanding of it than would the churches that are outside of communion with it. It's easy to criticize from outside. We all do it all the time. But to actually own that institution and to grow in understanding of it throughout the centuries is what the Catholic Church has done. And I was convinced by the Catholic claims on that. Does that mean that the Pope has always used his authority? Well, of course not. He's a man. There have been issues throughout the ages. But I think from my investigations, it was clear that the Pope has that authority and that he has maintained the integrity of the faith and of the sacraments. We did a podcast a while back about the role of Peter and the role of the Pope in that regard, and that he's just important for the structure of the church, that until Christ returns and is visible, there has to be somebody at the top. That's just how human institutions work. And if there isn't, like we said in the last episode, that vacuum is going to be filled by someone else. And so there are other things, other aspects of this question we can talk about, but I think that's kind of the first or the foundational one is who is the Pope and what is the nature of his authority? And I was convinced by the Catholic claims on that question.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think I would give three reasons why I'm Catholic and not Orthodox. The first is what you say, just the truth claims. Because as we've said over and over and over on this podcast, at the end of the day, like Chesterton's quote about why I'm a Catholic, I could give 10,000 reasons, but they would all come down to because it's true. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I had to choose the church that I thought won out on the truth, on truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And so whether it was like you say, and I think that's legit, I think the claims of Peter and Petrine succession and things like the filioque clause and some of these things, I do think at the end of the day, the Catholic Church has it right.
Right.
On those issues. And as you pointed out, that doesn't mean that all popes have exercised their authority well. It's an institution, and that the institution exists. There's been good popes and bad popes, and we had an episode called Mostly Average Popes. So I would say that. The truth claims, and we can go through them all, but I think that's right. The second thing, and this may be a little harder to explain, but one of the appeals that the Eastern Church has, and when you go to an Eastern Orthodox Church or you travel to that part of the world and you walk into one, you are being transported into something that's just remarkable because you do feel like you're going back 1700 years or whatever, 1500 years. The architecture, the art, the liturgy is stunning. And you go, I really just went into a time machine and went back to the early church. And that has a tremendous appeal, at least to me and people like me.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I want to go back and experience the church as it was in the early church. The problem that I have is that Orthodox churches have, to some degree or another, I don't want to say frozen themselves in time, but they've tried to preserve the church as it was 1600 years ago. And as Chesterton said, living things have to live. They have to grow. They have to evolve. We've talked about this before. You can't be 5 years old forever.
Right, right.
A little tree is supposed to get turned into a bigger tree. And that doesn't mean, we've talked before about Cardinal Newman.
In the development of doctrine.
Yeah, development of doctrine, and that we shouldn't pursue innovation, but organic development. And I think that the Eastern Church's desire to sort of preserve that ancient liturgy, that ancient aesthetic, all of that is wonderful, but it isn't realistic.
Well, because, I think it
because
has,
the Western Church has over time grown and evolved. So if you look at all of the things that have happened in the West, like, for example, we said in the last conversation, priestly celibacy, which was not a thing in the early church, but the papacy over time recognized it was a discipline for the Western church. And the monastic orders, not that there aren't monks in the East, but the rich development of the monastic orders, things like the rosary, like Marian doctrines, all of the things that have happened in the West, Thomas Aquinas, St. Francis of Assisi, Catholic...
The development of philosophy and theology.
Theology, Catholic social doctrines, just war theory, I mean, everywhere, whatever. All of that stuff that happened in the West, it's continued to grow and evolve. And so the Catholic Church today has a continuity, right? Just in the same way that the oak tree outside has a continuity with the baby oak tree that you planted, right?
Yep.
But it has grown and developed and spread its branches and all that kind of stuff. And so the Catholic Church today is richer and broader and deeper precisely because it was a living church. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Eastern Orthodoxy has an instinct to preserve. I think I told you once, when I was in Italy one time, I went to a monastery up in Norcia. This is the monastery up there where St. Benedict was born. Mm-hmm. And I got to see this medieval Latin mass that was done there. And it was like really remarkable. It's like, I think I just went back in a time machine 1,000 years. And it was really stunning and beautiful and impactful. But I also don't think that I can live in the year 900.
Well, I think it's a legitimate part of the church. The church is a diverse body. And I think that the Eastern liturgies, I mean, there are Eastern Catholic churches which celebrate the same liturgy as the Orthodox. They're a legitimate and needed part of the whole body of Christ, but they are not the entirety of it. Like the entirety of the body of Christ has to be able to grow and adapt to the challenges of any particular century or millennium. And if we try and make the whole church practice a sort of charism of stasis or of staying in one place, then we don't have the ability to do that.
Well, and it goes back to the papal authority thing, because a lot of that development in the West is because we have the institution of the papacy.
We have a referee for disputes.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a referee for disputes. And all of the things, not just in that capacity as the referee, but the development of an overarching structure in the Catholic Church that created the universities, that created the great orders, whether it's the Franciscans or the Dominicans and these things and all the things that have happened around in the Catholic Church and all the complex ways, the great missionary efforts, everything that it's done is because you have an organization institution. And so what's ironic is so many people go, well, I don't want institutional religion, but institutional religion is exactly what gave you all of this, right? And I said in the last conversation that there's a sense in which I know it's a stretched analogy, but it's like Protestantism. And like, for example, you've got all these different Reformed churches. Like we're the PCA, the Presbyterian Church of America, and we're the Christian Reformed Church and the Reformed Church of America, and we're the whatever. We're all sort of Reformed, but we don't have any overarching structure and nothing ever really happens. In the West, you have an institution, you have a church, and you have a structure to that church. And that structure, that institution, whether it's through the system of dioceses and bishops and archbishops and metropolitans going up to cardinals and popes, or down through the orders, the superior generals of the Franciscans or the Dominicans or whatever, all these different kinds of things have allowed the Western church to develop and grow and to be more of a living church. I'm not saying the Greek churches or the Orthodox churches are dead, but I think, like you use the word stasis, it's sort of like the feature and the benefit. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, it feels like it's kind of like going back in time. And I go, yeah, it's sort of good and it's sort of like not good. I'm just sharing why I didn't. And then I guess the third reason for me is very personal. And I'm not from that part of the world. You mentioned in the last conversation that there is a diaspora. Most of the Eastern churches that we have here in the United States are because of Russians or Ukrainians.
Well, all of them.
Syrians who move here. And Americans have then now joined
us. Oh, sure. Americans of other ethnicities will convert. Yeah.
But the thing is that I am a child of the West and Western civilization and the Western tradition. And so for me personally, Catholicism is synonymous with Western civilization.
Yeah, and I think that's a legitimate factor to consider. I mean, as I mentioned before, there are Eastern churches that are in union with Rome that are perfectly Catholic, that I can and have received the Eucharist at a Ukrainian Catholic church. And if you're in an area where there are Eastern Catholic churches, that may be something that you want to investigate, especially if your heritage is Russian or Ukrainian or Polish or some part of the Middle East. But even if not, I mean, there are different charisms in the church. There are different gifts and different forms of spirituality. And we didn't even get to talking about how prayer in the Eastern churches tends to look different than it does in the Western churches. If that appeals to you and the Holy Spirit is calling in that direction, an Eastern Catholic church can be a very beautiful and legitimate road to go down.
Yeah. And let's just unpack that just a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we in the last episode talked about how this all came about and the split in 1054, and as you mentioned earlier, the Eastern churches, not all of them disputed the authority of the Pope.
Yeah, and the history is complicated. And just to be clear, a lot of them, probably most of them, were in schism with Rome at one point and then were reunited. So in the centuries between Florence in the 15th century and today, in the last 500 years, roughly, those churches have, most of them came back into communion, and those are complicated historical and cultural stories to tell for each of them, whether it's the Ukrainian Catholics or the Greek Catholics or the Russian Catholics. But you have sort of this rich tapestry of East and West in the Catholic Church. Would it be so much better if all of the Orthodox were back in communion? Yes, absolutely. But like St. John Paul II described it as being like the church having two lungs, East and West, that having both of those within the communion of the church is like being able to breathe with two lungs and benefit from the oxygen that comes into the life of the body by having both.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. One other thing that I want to just toss in here, mm-hmm. for the Protestants who are listening or are thinking, well, I'm considering Catholicism. I want to go back to the ancient church, the church of history, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But man, I'm just really freaked out about the papacy, you know, the about the current pope or what's going on in the Catholic Church. And one of the things that you'll hear, like there's a famous writer, Rod Dreher, mm-hmm. who converted to Catholicism and then he, you know, bailed out of Catholicism to go to Orthodoxy because he was dismayed with the sexual scandals and the sexual and financial scandals. Okay, I'm going to tell you, there's no fence that you can jump over, no grass that's greener where you're not going to have corruption. The notion that there's corruption, whether it's sexual corruption or financial corruption in the Roman Catholic Church, but it's not in other places, is crazy. Okay. It was in the Protestant church. I could tell you, sure. I knew Protestant pastors that did bad things. Okay. This is the news every day. It's in schools, it's in colleges, it's in police departments and fire departments, it's in government, right? So the notion that somehow, well, I don't want to join the Roman Catholic Church because there are some corrupt priests or whatever, bishops. So I'm going to go to Orthodoxy where there won't be anybody who ever commits sexual, does bad things, is crazy, because I don't have anything to particularly to point to, but I can just tell you, I'd be willing to bet a nice seafood dinner that you're going to have bad apples mm-hmm. in the Eastern churches.
Well, and so obviously it's a much bigger pool in the Catholic Church because it's that much bigger. So you're going to see more stories just because there are more people.
Part of the thing with the Catholic Church is it draws a level of media scrutiny.
Sure.
So when Pastor Bob at the strip mall church down the street next to the Best Buy does some hinky thing with some woman in the church or something like that, or some guy in the church or whatever, it doesn't draw a huge amount of media scrutiny because it's just Pastor Bob in a strip mall church. When the Roman Catholic Church does it, the media crawls all over that and it publishes it. I'm not excusing those things. No. And I'm not saying they don't happen, but it draws a level of media scrutiny that is not drawn to other things. And I have no idea whether the media in Russia or the Ukraine crawls all over the churches there, pastors there, whatever, clerics there who do bad things. I have no idea what their news media is like. But I do know, and the point I'm trying to make is that for those who are saying, well, I'd be Catholic, except I just don't like all of the corruption or this or that or the politics, so I'm going to flee to greener pastures. The grass is greener on the other side of this fence. Orthodoxy would have none of this. I mean, I can't point to anything because I'm not Orthodox, but you're never going to escape the failings of human nature. You're never going to escape people who abuse the money or commit sexual immoral acts.
And along the same lines, you're not going to escape progressivism or doctrinal disputes or heresies by doing that either.
Oh, for that matter, right? I mean, the Eastern, we didn't get all into the weeds on this stuff. I mean, the Eastern Orthodox Church allows divorce. I think
it's complicated, but there are allowances for it.
Yeah, there's right. And there's other things that are different at the ground level. So again, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying it's very beautiful and the liturgy is beautiful. And I think the aesthetics are beautiful and their tradition of prayer is beautiful, but it's not perfect. And if what's keeping you from joining the Catholic Church is that you want to go and find the perfect church, you're not going to. and orthodoxy is going to have its own set of problems, is all I'm saying. So there's not an option out there that's going to be the problem-free church or the church where no cleric or bishop does hinky things or sketchy things, or no priest ever abuses a child or an adult in their church. That's going to happen. I mean, it happens in schools, it happens in police departments and universities and government. It's human nature.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be there. And if that's one of the things that people are like, well, now, if you don't like the current pope, well, popes change, right? There have been 270 of them, and they're going to keep changing. So those are things, but again, what that shouldn't be the decider for you, because it's the issue of whether the papacy is true. And as Corey and I said, for us, I think it is.
Not just for us, but that's our assessment.
Well, yeah. In terms of why we chose the way we chose 8 years ago. So Corey, I'm going to let you have the last word on this. Anybody who's listening out there that is considering orthodoxy or Catholicism, or considering a choice between the two, what's your final word?
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is I understand. I think that they're beautiful churches that have a lot of things going for them. I think it comes down to, what is the church that Christ founded? Where is the unity around the successor of the apostles? I think it's pretty clear that that is the Catholic Church, and that is the church headed by the Pope, the Bishop of Rome. The history is complicated. The doctrinal disputes are complicated, but I think at the end of the day, the truth is on the Catholic side. That's not to denigrate the Eastern churches in any way. I think they're wonderful, and I want them to be reunited with the church. I think the ones that already have been reunited with the Pope are awesome. And if you're really interested in that, I encourage you to look into it. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think the Catholic Church is the one holy Catholic and apostolic church founded by Christ, and I want to be in it, and I want you to be in it too.
Yeah. Well said. And just because you're Catholic doesn't mean that you can't appreciate some of the artistic things. Like,
oh, certainly I have icons in my house are Eastern.
I have Eastern icons in my house.
That's part of the global tradition, the truly Catholic tradition of the church.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And if you have a question, multiple people had written in about this, about the question of orthodoxy. If you've got a question or a comment, send it to me at consideringcatholicism@gmail.com. And would you do me a solid? Right now, as soon as we're done, would you click the rating button on the top of Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating? And would you also write a review either on our website, consideringcatholicism.com, or on Apple Podcasts? Those really, really help us in a lot of different ways. So I'd appreciate that. And again, join us next time and keep sending in your questions and your comments. And we appreciate you listening.
Thanks very much.